Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime, LGBT, thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCPW 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
You are back in the House of Mystery, and I'm Al Warren. On the other side of the country, we've got the Nor'easter Martino.
I'm here.
Nor'easter Martini. Drinking martinis while there's a Nor'easter.
Well, I'm shoveling.
Oh, your wife's shoveling. Come on.
Yeah. Well,
I know what's going on. I know what's going on at that house. You're making the cocktails and sitting with the cat, and she's shoveling and doing it all.
Well, at least I'm making the cocktails.
Well, yeah. got to do something. Someone's got to do it, right?
That's right.
You know, another day, and all this weird stuff.
The cocktails aren't going to make themselves.
No, well, that's true. You know, you got to train the cat.
That's a good idea.
You know, I mean, come on. At least the dog can go get my beer. Like, what's your cat going to do? What can your cat do?
Nothing.
Well, see? Well, I'm telling you. Get on it. You know? Okay. So, anyway, the week continues, and now we are visiting Washington State. And we're going to talk to an author there who's on Wild Blue Press. Well, there you go. I did two books with Wild Blue Press years ago. Yeah, I remember them. Anyway, so Mr. Terry Persaud, thank you for being here.
Well, thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Well, we'll see if you say that at the end of the show.
Yes, so far. Maybe I should have said that. So far, I really appreciate it.
Well, there you go. It's as good as it gets now. So bumpy ride ahead here. Your book is called The Right Thing. The new one. But it looks like you've got history in writing, and you've been a winner of the Book Excellence Awards in science fiction category. So do you consider yourself a science fiction writer in general?
Actually, I've always been like this, kind of, I don't know, anything that shows up kind of writer. So I've written everything from, you know, mysteries and thrillers to science fiction, fantasy, and general fiction, and just a little bit of everything. I think the point was I had a regular job, and still have most of the time, and it allows me to kind of play with things. There's a quote I read recently. Actually, I think it was in Search of Spencer, where one of the essays in there was said something about they see genre jumping, if you will, as kind of a crop rotation. So that, well, one thing is laying fallow and and gaining more momentum, the other thing is being written. And I think that's how I look at it, because during a year, I'll probably write at least two novels, and usually in different genres.
Wow. So it's just kind of whatever piques your interest at the time.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, if I get an idea from somewhere, you know, it'll stick with me for a while. I have, as everyone, probably you do too, ideas all over your computer and on your desktop and everywhere else. And, you know, when it's time to write the next book, I just start reading through everything and see which one clicks. So,
yeah. Yeah, I do that. I mean, Dave's just got porno all over his.
There's some good ideas there, I'll bet.
Well, I'm just wondering, you know, writing in many genres, has that been a challenge with publishers and your branding, or do you feel that works out better for you?
Actually, it's been impossible. It is really difficult because, you know, all the agents that I have, I often will have two agents in different genres. They all say the same thing that you're talking about. They say, you know, please stick with one genre so we can do this. But what they're asking for is the same book over and over again. You know, they call it, you know, the same book, only different. And that's hard to write. If you're a writer, I think your curiosity goes beyond that next book and the next book and the next book. You might explore a theme for a couple books, maybe, but you're more apt to explore the characters for a couple of books than the theme. And so I really, that kind of thing worries me. And when I do read a lot, and so some people can pull that off. They can write the same kind of book over and over, and they're always good. But it's just never been something that suited me.
I wonder, maybe you can use a pseudonym. Like, that's kind of what my idea is, that so if you do one type of writing and then you do a different type, you have a different name.
Yeah, that's really a great idea. And I know my daughter's a writer too, and she does that. She's got two names right now, and she's looking at a third one for the same reason, so that she's not all over the place. And so when people go there, they know what they're to expect from her. And so I've thought about that in the past. Because I've written so many right now with my own name, it's kind of muddied the waters a little. But she keeps reminding me that it's not ever too late to go back and repackage those books with a different name. And maybe that would work. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I would. At this point, I would. That's my thought of it, because you know, because you look at any branding, you look at that in music, you look at movies, you look at in any type of thing, you get a movie star that's doing something, some sort of style of, you know, action adventure, and then all of a sudden they do romantic, and it's like people are like, you can't do that, or, you know, and then the fans will direct you, just like musicians, you know, you get a band and they decide to do a country album all of a sudden. You know, the fans get mad, or that's no good, or why, you know, who's he think he is? People think they know you, and they tend to put what they think you should do or be with your brand. So I do. I think if you're going to pursue a lot of other styles of writing, I would use a whole new brand.
Okay, that sounds good. Just a little bit more work when you're talking about, you know, all your different platforms that you need to be on. Probably more than one website. So you think that would be valuable?
Well, you know, I almost would think that you could almost get away with it, because I'm going to get into fiction, some of the fiction writing here, mm-hmm. but I'm going to use a different name. But I don't know that I need to get to a whole new website rather than just a page on the website.
Well, that's true.
You know, and plus, I think I sort of think websites are kind of getting into the past.
Oh, personally. What do you think the new way of getting to reach people?
Just social media. People are just moving on, and I'm getting a lot less traffic on websites than ever before. And I'm hearing this from a lot of people, and some people aren't even doing them. Mm-hmm. Younger, newer writers aren't even doing it. They would rather do a TikTok than a website.
Huh. Yeah.
You know, which is kind of, it seems out of strange to someone probably our age, and it is. But it's just what young people are doing. So it's something you have to keep in mind, that it's very fluid The consumer base is fluid, and the readers and technology is changing. So you try to keep in involved in it as best you can, but I don't know that. It's a strange world. Who knows?
Yeah, that's true. It's moving so fast and so back and forth, and you never know what you're to expect, I guess.
Yeah, and I would think, because also I would think it's confusing. I know what you're saying, but I know we've come across writers like Miles Cameron, who has another name, who writes, science fiction, and then he writes fantasy, and he writes all these different types under different names. But when you go to his website, or if you go to his Facebook, it's just one name, and he just promotes all of the stuff he does, and it seems to be okay. I don't know. That doesn't seem to make sense to me. But again, it might just be the generation thing.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that sounds like a good idea, though. Yeah. So so far, too, I got to do a shout out to Wild Blue Press. They have really worked hard and have done a really nice job of editing and proofreading and helping with marketing and everything else. I've worked with small independent publishers for a long time, and these guys are one of the best.
Steve Jackson's very efficient. He's very thorough. He's a very good editor-publisher himself, and there is some good – definitely, I will say the editing team's pretty good, and they're very thorough. So now let's talk about your book, The Right Thing. What is The Right Thing?
This detective who's trying to decide what's the right thing to do with each one of these people, because they all have done something wrong. So part of it's moralistic and part of it's, actual criminal. And it's a matter of, were they coerced to do it? Were they, all these other factors that come in when you do a crime. And he's trying to somehow determine what's right and what's wrong so that he can interact that way, so that he can help people who he thinks are did the crime because they were coerced and other people put him in jail. So it's kind of that moralistic vague point that I was trying to play with.
Yeah, that is an interesting point or thing to think about, is about the right thing to do and what is a proper punishment for someone as well. It's tough. You deal in this book with a lot of the computer hackers and that sort of world. And that goes on a lot today, and it goes on in our world because computers are such a big part of our world. I wonder how do you go about deciding what you're going to include in a book? And what's realistic?
Oh, I do a lot of technical articles and have talked to a lot of people in the cybersecurity field, as well as, there's all kinds of reports out. One of them, I think the Clarity Biannual Industrial Control System report says that in 2021, there were 637 vulnerabilities affecting industrial controls, which is what I was covering basically as part of the prison control system. That's a lot. That's a lot. 70% of them are considered critical. It's a big problem. And hackers do it for all kinds of different reasons. Some of them are altruistic and some of them are not. And so I was, again, yeah, I play with that whole idea. When is it okay to do this? Is it ever okay? And, how do you treat these people from one end to the other? Where do you stand on that moral ground? It's pretty interesting stuff.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a lot of uncharted territory in a sense. Like a lot of people probably haven't given this a lot of thought, or there's so many other things going on in the world. Plus there's, working and keeping their life going and stuff. And I would imagine unless it affects you personally, you probably don't think about it too much.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. But I always consider when you look at the news and the government talks about being hacked somewhere or some big company is hacked, you have to realize that with all that money behind them, they can't stop the hackers. And so I look at all the online security, you know, methods that they use to try to keep you secure. And so I figure if the government can't do it, chances are my bank isn't going to be able to do it. You know, Walmart's not going to be able to do it. And I'm not going to be able to do it well enough here. The question is it worth coming into my computer and doing anything? Then what kind of information are they going to get from me? And chances are there's not enough. So there's a better chance that they're not going to try to reach me. But there are always hackers out there who just want to see how many places they can hack and how many computers can they get into, period. So it's, yeah, it's a strange world. And everybody I talk to always comes up with stories that are just unbelievable about, you know, we've read. Anybody can watch me through my own cell phone. They can watch me through the television. You know, there's just no getting away from it anymore.
Well, do you have ethical hackers in the book?
I do.
Did you research that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do. I have, when you say ethical, yeah, they have a good reason, if you will. So I try to, like I said, I'm trying to balance all that out in my own head. And the best way for me to do that is through a novel and say, you know, how bad is this part really? And it was an interesting thing for me to play with and start to think about, because often I will make a rash judgment, you know, if it's against the law, it's against the law kind of thing. And yet you look at these people who have deep, deep feelings for why they're going about it. And you have to understand that, you know, their belief system is just as valid. It's just different than mine. And so a lot of the times I'm playing with those moral issues. Well, in books, that's what we do. In a lot of times.
Does it concern you a little bit about the political correctness in social media, that you think about how you write characters or how you have them interact with each other? Does it play a role in your writing?
I try not to let it. Of course, it's going to get in there at times because I read so much about what's happening, but I'm very conscious of if we don't explore all these different personalities, then we're probably not doing our job either. So, you know, there are all kinds of people out there and they think in all different kinds of ways. And if we try to be too careful about what we're doing, we whitewash everybody out and we end up with bland characters and characters that don't have opinions and don't have belief systems. And I try really hard not to let that bother me too much. I do have a group of people who do beta reading for me. And if I'm a little harsh somewhere with my language or I don't understand, you know, certain values, they usually tell me and I'll soften things. But I'm very careful to make sure that we still have these opinions in there anyway.
Yeah. Well, I think you have to. I think it's important. We're human, so we've got to go through these experiences, right? We've got to live through them. I think it's important. So your main investigator, or your investigator 10, I guess you call.
Yeah.
Now, how do you create a character like that? How did you decide on the personality, who he was going to be? Is there a lot of you in this character?
I never think there's much of me in any characters, although, you know, it's, as a writer, you know it's coming through you. But once I get a character's background and it starts to feed into their personality, and he'll do things that I would never do, and you know, not do things I think he should do. It's interesting. Well, you know this because, you know, once you're inside the character's head, if your writing is flowing properly, you really aren't there. You're not there as a person. So that character somehow, and I hate the cliche that the character takes over, but it's kind of what happens. You start to see through the character's eyes, whether you've shifted the way you think or not. That's a different story. And maybe at the end of the novel, you're thinking, well, that was interesting. And maybe I learned something here, but it's kind of like an actor. If they get into the person they're acting, they should kind of disappear. And this other person shows up.
When you're creating your characters, can you hear them? Do you have an inner monologue? Is that something that how the characters present themselves to you?
Really a good question. I don't think I've ever had anybody ask that question.
Yeah, we're only getting started.
Yeah, good. Good. I'm glad. When I sit down to write, I meditate ahead of time. And once I sit down to write and I become that character, I start to feel differently. So that when I'm writing, I can feel that character coming through. And there are times when I can tell when I'm getting out of character, is when I start to think, did I say that right? You know, or you know, is he allowed to say that word in this book, right? And so as soon as I do that, I stop that and get back in there. I think one of the things I learned years ago is to shut down that internal editor completely, get it out of the way and just do the character. Afterward, when you go through the rewrites and my beta readers and all that, then I can sit down and say, yeah, okay, we can make this clearer, or maybe bump up the emotion a little bit by slowing it down or speeding it up, or, you know, changing sentence structure, or all those kind of things that start to come in during the rewrite. But that initial writing, I feel like that's who I am. All of a sudden, that's who I am. Does that kind of answer?
Oh, absolutely.
Do you dress up like the character too? Get right into it.
Yeah, know. I do not do. Although I know a guy who does that. So.
Yeah. No, I know. We've interviewed people that will act like the character. They'll dress like them. They'll live like them to get the feel of that character. So it's funny, but there's people that do.
Yeah. Oh, you know, whatever works, right? Whatever gets you to that page and gets it clear and lets the stuff come out the way it's supposed to. Sure.
Now underneath the story, so that you've got the storyline and the kind of the what's happening with the characters and the moral judgments and stuff, is there a subtext or is there something you want a reader to get out of your book that's not the main story, but at the end of the book, they think about a certain subject or something other than the story?
Yeah, I think if there's anything, I'm a firm believer in curiosity. And I think most of the time when I'm through with a novel, I want people to just think differently. Maybe that's it. Just say, you know, maybe I looked at this a little bit from this angle instead of that angle, and question their own thoughts and values and belief system to perhaps be open enough to change. I think books, novels particularly, are written to open our minds, not close them. And so I never have a specific theme that I'm trying to push through. I find when I first started writing years and years ago, I would do that. And it would come across as somebody pounding you over the head with information. And hopefully I don't do that anymore. Hopefully what I do is lay out the story and the characters so that whoever's reading it can make their own judgments and be a little curious about why do I think this happened or that happened, or would that character do the same thing under different circumstances, and just be more curious and open with their lives.
How do you develop the character in the sense of, like, so you've got Ten, who's, you know, his wife and unborn child were murdered, and so he's got emotional issues going on right now, and yet he's dealing with a partner, and you've got like a woman's prison break. How can you create that character so they seem real? Like, what is it that you do with yourself? Where does that come from, you think?
I think so. The way I look at the world is that if you lead a very sheltered life, and the worst thing that happens to you is you get a hangnail, and the best thing that happens to you is you've got $1 million to spend. That's no different than somebody who the worst thing that happens to them is they got beat up, and the best thing that happens to them is they got a good meal. Within all of us, there is the worst thing and the best thing. And no matter what that is along the line, we get to write about that. And so for any character that I have, regardless of how deep either one of those goes, that's what they're working with. And so they're always working with these two ends of the spectrum within themselves. And as a human, I can do that on my own level. So maybe the worst thing that happened to Ten is his wife and child were killed. Maybe the worst thing that happened to me was that my dog got hit by a car. But I still have this feeling, this worst feeling in me, where I cried and I was upset and, you know, I watched it all happen and it was horrible, that I can pull from when I'm trying to talk through Ten. Now, again, I become that character, but that's where the emotions come from, is from me. I get that, you know, because it comes through me. But I still have the best and the worst that I can pull from. Hopefully, you know, when you're writing the novel, it comes across.
So Maria Tanner, the partner, so how do you write a woman character like that?
Well, we might as well go there. So there's this.
Are you dressed up and playing the role of the character?
That's what I was expecting next. Yeah, that it's the silk underwear. That's what does it.
Yeah. Well, whatever it takes, you know.
That's right. Again, you know, I really think it's like being a schizophrenic actor, so that every character somehow switches in your head while you're writing them. You know, we all have a feminine and a masculine side, whether we're male or female. I read female authors and they do male parts just as well as the male authors do. You know, there's just this something that I think happens to an author, that when they're in that mode, that stuff shows up. If it doesn't show up, then you don't have the best story, or the character seems a little flat, or you have these people saying, you know, no woman would ever do that kind of thing. And hopefully my beta readers, again, they'll catch that stuff. So I have women who will say, you can't have her say this or do this, because that's just not the way we are, basically.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I have to take it with a grain of salt because people are every possible way you can imagine. But you look at the book and you say, does that matter? Does it fit? Does it not fit? And then make that decision during the rewrites. And but getting into a woman's point of view for me is no different than getting into any other character's point of view. And I've written, I've written fantasies and, you know, magical realism where I'm in a tree, you know, a tree comes through and talks. So I really don't know if I can explain it better than that. It's some kind of meditative state that just shifts from one thing to the other. When it works, it works. When it doesn't work, then I don't publish that book or don't send it out.
Right? Yeah, yeah. That's how it goes. Mm-hmm. And now I wonder, so when we talk about hackers and ransomware and all these different things going on that you see in the news and the world of hacking, how in touch do you think society is with what's real and what's not? And I mean that because there's so many movies, action movies, and all sorts of plays and stories out there about different things, you know, and the hackers are always really, really beautiful people with, you know, high heels and wearing a tight leather outfit, and they can hack anything. And so I think there's a real fantasy behind it as well. Do you think society, most people in general, kind of know what's realistic about that world?
I doubt it. You know, it reminds me of the police shows on TV, how quickly something happens in an hour that really takes a week, right? Or longer, or much longer. And the same thing with, I think, the hackers. Sometimes they show a hacker getting into some huge government site, you know, 3 minutes. And honestly, that's not happening out there. It takes try after try after try after try. And usually these people are coming at it from five different directions and just trying everything and anything. And it can take a long time. But you have enough people in the room doing that from all different directions, and somebody gets through, or maybe more than one person gets through. And the other thing that's interesting that I haven't seen, I don't know if I've seen it at all. is chip replacement. So we have a hardware chip that's got security on it. If we pull that chip out and put a different chip in, the security's gone. And that can be done in the plant. So some guy putting that PC board together can change out a few chips, and all of a sudden the security that they thought was there isn't there anymore. This is one of the things that concerns, I think, the government right now. They're doing all this work with China, saying, well, we can't let China's communication system here because it's not so much just the matter of it's China, but the chips that are in our own systems, if they come from China, can possibly be tampered with. So we've got a lot of different angles to come at it. And I think the movies show the exciting parts of it. And it's a little bit less exciting than that, maybe on the ground most of the time. But pretty much anything you can imagine can be done.
I was just wondering, with the right thing, you know, how much of the reality of hacking do you have to change for the drama of the story? Or can you be a little bit more realistic in because it's in a novel format?
Yeah, so when I talked to the guys a couple of places who are involved in cybersecurity, they kind of gave me some guidelines. And the one guy read the book and said, you can't say it this way. Or I wasn't able to get down to the code, for example. Not that I would want to in a book like that. How many people would want to even follow that? It's not a textbook, it's a novel. So I had to stick with some general methods that they use. And as long as I did that, they were fine with it. You know, I wasn't going down too deeply. I wouldn't be able to anyway. I would have had to ask them to sit down and say, okay, let's go through this code thing and how we go through it. I read, who was it? Dan Brown. I forget the novel title, but he had one that there was some hacking going on, and he did the same kind of thing. He was very careful about how he talked about it, and rightfully so. It would be really boring to get too deeply into it.
So where did the idea for this book come from for you?
It came from those articles. It came from talking to those people. I did a couple of research papers with a company about all this, and the more I researched it and talked to them, the more I thought, wow, what would happen if somebody tried to hack the prison system, and how would they go about it? And I went through a couple of different ideas on how they would go about it, and came up with the one that's in the book, because that one seemed easy enough to discuss, I guess. But a lot of the stuff I write comes from the things I read. So I read science magazines, you know, Scientific American, ID, Discover magazine, things like that. I try to go through them. I read a book a week, so I'm constantly reading different sci-fi and all kinds of things, you know, quantum mechanics, you name it. And then because I'm researching and writing articles for trade journals, I've got all this information in there, and sometimes a couple keys will come through and say, this would make an interesting idea. And I wake up one morning early in the morning and come in here and I start working. So
did you put yourself in prison to
No, but I have been in that prison years and years ago. In fact, that's part of the reason why I used it. Years and years ago, when I was in high school, I was repairing air conditioners, believe it or not, and washers and dryers and things like that, major appliances. And the prison there in Muncie, I had to go there one time and repair I don't even remember what it was I was there to repair. I just remember how nervous I was walking around there with all these women criminals, you know, kind of thing. But it was, and I thought, you know what? I know how it felt to be there. So maybe I'll use that. And then my sister still lives up in that area. So I had her doing some research and reconnaissance for me and, you know, look at these streets and what does this look like and all that. The weather, how it felt to her. So yeah, you do your research everywhere you possibly can. And yeah, you pull all the things together. It was an interesting thing to do.
What do you find your writing structure is like? So do you like plot away time? Can you just sort of sit down and I'm clear 10 to 3 and I'm going to write today and you sit down and write? Or do you have to be in a certain mood and get it going?
Yeah, so I look at it like a job. It is a job. So I get up early in the morning. I used to get up at 4, 4:30. Now that I work out of my own house, I get up later, usually 6 or 7. I meditate for a few minutes. I sit down and I start to write. I read what I wrote the day before, sometimes 2 days before. And then by the time I get to the end of it, I know where I'm going next and I write from that point forward. And usually it takes me that little bit of time to get back into the character. So I meditate, I sit down, I write usually between 1,000 and 2,000 words a day. So, you know, I think that's an 80 or 90,000 word novel. So probably took me 3 months to get the first draft. And then, of course, you have to go back and rewrite, get my once or twice, and then get beta readers. And you know how the process goes. Do the repairs a little at a time and over again. And by the time you start sending it out, you've probably read it 3 or 4 or 5 times. And hopefully it's fairly smooth and cleaned up and ready to go. And, you know, but yeah, I'm an everyday kind of writer. So every day, 365 days a year, I write at least 1,000 words a day.
Well, you said your daughter is a writer.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just wondering, how is it having more than one writer in the family? And do you act as each other's sounding board at all or anything like that?
Actually, we do. She usually is one of my first readers and vice versa. I read her book. She writes fantasy under one name and then women's fiction under the other name. And it's really helpful. She's really, really honest, probably more honest than some of my beta readers who want to be nice. You know, even though they want me to know that there's something wrong, they want to be nice about it. My daughter's not like that. She knows that it's not helpful. And I'm the same thing with her. If we think something's off, we just say, you know what, this isn't working here. Sometimes I don't know what it is. It's just, I've read it 3 times and it just doesn't seem right. I don't know what it is. Other times I can give her clues on what it is and vice versa. So she does the same thing with me. She'll read through a novel and let me know what she thinks about it, where she thinks I need to fix it. Yeah, she's one of my best beta readers, which is interesting. My wife also reads my books and typically will read Nicole's as well. But she's not a writer. So what she does is say, I like this character, I don't like this character, kind of people. But that's perfect because sometimes in the side notes, she can say, I really don't like your main character right now. And that's really important information for me to know. Because do I want somebody to like the main character all the time? Probably not. But certain times, maybe so. And if they make a decision that's really, really hard to take, and I get that kind of a response from 3 or 4 people, I usually know I have to somehow support it a little better than I did.
Reader's perspective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When you finish a book like this, do you ever look back and realize any sort of change that you've made about yourself by writing this book?
Yeah. Wow. Yes, probably more than once. I go into a book like this with I try to go in with an open mind and, like I said, explore those moral values. I'm a kind of a, if it's against the law, it's against the law kind of person. I really am. So I'll look at the characters and I'll think, man, I don't know if I would have done the same thing that Ten did in here about some of the characters. It may have been more difficult for me to kind of let them off the hook, but I can see the point. You know, I can see where my feeling of structure might be off sometimes. And so, yeah, I try to let each book that I write influence me as well. Again, I think it's about curiosity and always staying open. And so if I do that for myself, then I think it's probably valuable for me. And it allows me to see other people's opinions all the time.
Yeah, I guess you could certainly see how certain people come to their ways of life or their ways of believing by what they lived through.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. And it makes you think a little bit like, if I had gone through that, would it change my views too? And it helps us to understand all the other people out there, right? Because we don't all agree. We all have different personalities. We have different belief systems. And the more I can be tolerant of everyone else, the better.
Well, kind of in the same vein, you know, you're talking about how you kind of become the character as you're writing this character. Do you feel that they stay with you long after you've written them?
Yeah, some more so than others. So I've written a couple of books with Ten as the main character because of that, because the character kind of sticks with me, almost like I'm not done exploring this person yet. I'm not finished with this guy, or somehow they're not finished with me. Other characters, after the book is done, I'm kind of done. You know, it's like, okay, I explored that character enough. I should be okay. It's interesting because sometimes it's like that with the character and sometimes it's like that with the idea. So if you look at Orson Scott Card's idea of milieu, idea, character, and event, all four of those things I can reuse if I need to. So one of my fantasies, the Double Sight series, there's four books in there so far, and I might end up writing more. It's about shapeshifters that can only shift into their Native American totem. And the idea is so interesting and fascinating to me that I've written four books now with it and might write more just to explore other animal-human connections. So it depends on the characters and the idea and all those things, whether or not I go back to it again and again.
What do you do with your character? Like when you say 10 and you've used them in a few books, are you focusing on growth in that character? And do you sort of plot or outline what you're going to do with that person?
I think each book takes them in a different direction. Maybe it explores a different part of their personality. The more complex that character ends up being, the more different parts of the personality I can explore. They don't necessarily go in a row. I think you can read any of the books in any order and still get the whole story. I think of David Baldacci. You know, if you pick up any of his books in a series, you can read any one in the series. And there's enough information about past books or whatever that you don't lose anything. And I like that sense about it, but they each kind of explore a different idea. And I think that's what I drew with Ten so far. So there's different aspects of him that need to be explored that aren't complete yet.
Yeah, it's amazing. You spend a lot of time analyzing the person that you're writing about, and they're not real.
Yeah. Isn't it, though? When you think about it, we're a little crazy.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's kind of insane, really. You're kind of going on about and some sort of analyzing or trying to understand what a character is, but they're not real. They're in your mind.
Yeah. So, doesn't it make you wonder if the, you know, the whole theory about the universe being a hologram, and you know, that we're some video game and we're just part of that video game, it starts you to really wonder about all those things, you know, when we're doing this. So I wonder if in some other place, maybe in my deep in my mind somewhere, that the character thinks they're real.
Yeah.
Doesn't realize that I'm making it up. You can go a long way with things like that. It's like thinking about infinity, right? Mm-hmm. So our universe goes on forever. And the more you think about it and the deeper you get into that, the more difficult it is to wrap your head around. And so, you're right.
Well, maybe you're just the character and maybe Ten is the real person.
There you go. Wouldn't that be fun? See, that's a good idea for a sci-fi novel, isn't it?
Oh, there you go.
You know, there you go. Where the whole book is this whole thing is this writer writing about this character and find out that the character is the real person. I like that.
Oh, there you go. Use it. Go ahead.
I will have that in my notes, and you never know, it might come up with it eventually.
Yeah, by all means. I advise writers all the time. A lot of them don't make it too, so so it, you know, this last few years too, with the stresses, especially in the U.S. with you know, politics and COVID, and it just seems like it's kind of a little bit nutty at times, and but with that outside stress going on, like outside of your house kind of thing, does that get into your mind and affect how you're writing? Or maybe if you write darker because of stressful things going on around you?
I think it informs me. So I remember a long time reading about, you know, when you're in the hospital and your parent is dying, if you're a writer, you're taking note to what, how things smell and who's doing what and what kind of sounds you have and, you know, what emotions are being expressed. And I think that's what's happened with this. For me, I'm really curious about how people interact. So all the politics and the news stations and all the different sides, it's interesting to see who's saying what and why. Or how they're interacting with one another. The same thing with this whole COVID thing. It's really interesting how it's brought out the aggressiveness of certain people to feel like it's okay to yell at other people. You know, somebody yells across the street, they're way across the street, and they're yelling at you across the street saying, "Yeah, man, you got to put your mask on the right way," or, you know what I mean? So you... It's interesting to me, and I really take note in how we interact on a regular basis, because those are all the ways we get to do our with our characters. We get our characters to be able to interact in all those ways. So even though it took COVID to get people to that space, there are people who are in that space all the time, and I can write about that.
Yeah, I think it makes me feel really comfortable about writing totally wingnut characters.
Yep.
Because, you know, the concept of, you know, I don't believe that. That would never happen. You know, the last few years, it's like, it's kind of blown that out of the water.
Exactly. That's how I feel, too. And, you know, what do they say? You know, real life is stranger than fiction. It's about time fiction caught up.
Yeah, because you know, the way, you know, and I just see, because you don't even have to take sides, you just look at someone, you know, if someone walks into the Dunkin' Donuts and throws his hot coffee on someone for not wearing a mask and burns them, and then you've got the same person or not, a different person walking in the same sort of thing and punching the clerk because she's saying you have to wear a mask, just the way people behave with each other it's amazing, like how far they'll go. And I think a lot of that is kind of something you go, well, no, people would never do that. But we're seeing it kind of happen all the time now.
Absolutely. And all the people who are dragged off of airplanes, you know.
Well, some of them are funny. Come on.
Yeah, well, that's...
Some of the, you know, the guy that was on there, that he was growling, like this, and they have to take him off. I mean, there's just, you know, come on. There's that, I think we're seeing so much more of it now. Maybe it's because of the internet and everyone's got a phone and you can see it now. Maybe this always went on. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either, but it's everywhere right now. But you're right. You know, that's interesting that you mentioned the internet, because that's the other place that's allowed people to be rude if they want to be rude. Or like we started this conversation at the beginning where, you know, people can say, well, that character was awful. And, you know, they can say anything they want through the internet and through social media. I always laugh because my daughter and I were talking the other day about good reviews and bad reviews and, you know, whether or not you should even read them. And I told her, I always look for the first 5-star to see what they say and the first 1-star to see what they say to try to figure it out. But after the 1-star, as soon as I'm done reading what they said about my book, I go to one of my favorite authors and look at their 1-stars and read those. Yeah. And I say, yeah, okay, it's all right. It's all right. You know, everybody gets these 1-stars. People are different. But we get to say anything we want right now. And Amazon and Goodreads and, you know, Bookstagram and wherever else, you know, people can really pan you or not. And the sad part about that is it can and it may or may not affect sales, right?
Yeah.
And I'm not always sure whether it does or not. I sometimes think that visibility is visibility no matter what. Mm-hmm. If somebody, I had a review on one of my novels a while ago where all it said was too much cussing. And I thought, well, that's great because that's going to appeal to certain people. So you might have thought it was a 1-star, but somebody else is going to say that's pretty cool and they're going to go there. So yeah. You just don't know. Just don't know where you.
Yeah, I think it's true. I think it's exposure. You really like interacting with people on social media and that or not?
Yeah, you know, I do to a certain extent. I can spend too much time there, and so I try very hard not to. Well, because I write novels in the morning, and then I have a regular job that I do the rest of the day. So my timing is kind of in between everything else. I try to be on, and I try to pay attention and, you know, post from time to time. I'm very much an introvert. And so it takes me a little energy to do things like that. And so I probably don't do it as often as somebody who's an extrovert. But I try. I try to do it as best I can.
That's all you can do. Okay, so let's talk about your website and how people can find you. How do you like people to find you?
Sure. It's just my name, www.terryperson.com. And you can find all my books on there. You know, it's separated into fantasy, sci-fi, crime, that kind of thing. I also have 11 books of poetry out. So, like I said, I write pretty much anything and just love what I do. I just love writing. I like rewriting. I think that's the important thing for any author. You have to kind of like rewriting as well. It's just a lot of fun. So that's the best way to find me. And of course, on Amazon, you know, just look up my name and all my books are on there.
Right. Well, we'll have all that on the website as well, so people can find you with one click. And of course, if you're ever in Washington, people just see some schizo walking around talking to trees, it's probably Terry. So
that's right.
Just remember that. You know, that's how you find him. Just yeah, you know, he's dressed up like one of the prisoners and talking about, you know, hacking and all that sort of stuff. Just be aware. Just don't get too close. Keep a distance. Well,
I think a lot of people would agree with that.
better that than not. You know, so now the book is called The Right Thing, and you need to buy this book. And the author was our guest. It's Terry Persson, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you very much for having me on. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Terry.
To find out more about our show, guests, or to listen to past shows from our archive, please go to www.houseofmysteryradio.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High-quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.